Diversity Music Group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color. NJ fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up. I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm a disease to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter. In the first degree, I am
success. Young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't say the day I'm ready, I'm fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chase, want my life to you. Success, success. Young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't say the day I'm ready, I'm fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chase, want my life to you. Success, success.
And we welcome you to the latest edition of the Green and White Show here on this Sunday, November 22nd, 2015. Of course, your boys, Joseph Haas and Amiri Tella here with you today. Haas, my man, how are you?
I'm feeling absolutely wonderful. Are you kidding me? Green and White Show 112. I mean, hey, you know what? It's right before the holidays, so you know I'm thankful. Thankful for another Sunday of NFL games, Amiri. You know what? The award season's over in the Major League Baseball, and for the way the Mets finished up, I'm just thankful the baseball season is finally over. Guess what? We're going to be talking to Mark Sanchez and some Rex Ryan. I don't know how Jets fans are going to be. Are they going to be thankful for that? I know one NFL team that's thankful, Amiri, and that's the Dallas Cowboys. They get Tony Romo back, so you know they're thankful. We're thankful to be joined by Antoine Staley, Jeff Thurn, and Brian Benway today. And of course, we're always thankful for the listeners. Keep us motivated to bring you the Green and White Show each and every Sunday. So as usual, Amiri, I know I'm thankful. But why am I still talking? Are you ready to talk some Jets football or what?
Of course. There's a lot to discuss, Haas, this week. The New York Jets take on the Houston Texans. And, you know, we spent last week talking about the disappointing result that was the Bills game and on Thursday Night Football. And the Jets really did not impress anybody with their 22-17 loss. And I think now that we've had a little week to watch the way the NFL has kind of played out, this game against the Texans is very crucial for how the Jets will continue through the rest of the season. This is one of those games where, and we always have these in the season, always have a couple of them inserted in every single team's schedule, but it seems like this is this could be considered a must-win game if the Jets want to make it to the postseason, right, Haas?
Oh, definitely a must-win game, Amiri. You're talking about a team that needs to stay focused on that five seed. Here's one of the teams in that division that will allow the Jets to possibly host a playoff game. You got to keep the Houston Texans under, out. You got to keep them down. You got to hit them. They're a very explosive defensive team. You know you're going to see a very energetic pass rush with their star number 99, J.J. Watt. Must win. I believe it is. Even though Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to be coming back from surgery, he says he's good to go. Coach Todd Bowles says he's good to go. The team believes in him. This is going to be not just an exciting road game, but this is going to be the kind of game, Amiri, that if the Jets don't win, put themselves that much further behind the Patriots, and with the Buffalo Bills on Monday night, man, must win. You nailed it.
Right. You know, again, I think it all goes back to the fact that the New York Jets are coming off of that loss against the Bills. And, you know, I think the entire fan base was kind of put in a shock state of mind as the Jets are 5-4 right now. And it's comparatively speaking to how they started the season, 4-1. It seems like this year has the potential to go completely wrong. Now, when you take a look at the game like the Houston Texans, as you mentioned, Haas, I certainly expect the New York Jets to be in a position where they can use their different abilities and advantages to defeat this Houston Texans team. But, you know, when you talk about a game on the road against Houston, a team that is coming off of a big win in their own right against the previously undefeated Cincinnati Bengals, Haas, I would not be surprised if the Houston Texans put up a very solid fight against this New York Jets team. And when you talk about, you know, the prowess that the Texans have defensively, obviously led by J.J. Watt on the defensive line, and and how chaotic that can be for opposing offenses, for opposing quarterbacks. This might become a game where the Jets are going to have to put out what they need to in order to get this victory. I don't know if it's going to be one of those games where they far and away are advantaged just because they are the New York Jets taking on the seemingly inferior Houston Texans. So the Texans have won two of the last two games. Obviously, again, beating the Bengals, a huge emotional, euphoric win for that team, for that fan base. This could be an interesting game for Houston as they are at home right now. They're trying to get themselves back in the playoff conversation in that terrible AFC South. I would not be surprised, Haas, if this game comes down to a couple of drives late in the game.
It definitely could. The Jets, I want to touch on the point you made about the Jets going in, looking at like the superior outfit. Of course, Ryan Fitzpatrick coming back from injury, non-throwing thumb, had his surgery there. Guess what? Brian Hoyer out as starter for the Texans. They're going to see T.J. Yates, who's only going to be on the roster for a couple of weeks, but longtime backup quarterback there, T.J. Yates. That's another name that should bring shivers and chills to Cincinnati Bengals fans' spines. Wait, the Bengals? They lost? They're no longer undefeated? Amiri, I've been telling you all season how I feel about the Bengals. Take it to the playoffs. Let's see guys do it in the postseason. Yeah. Couldn't even do it against the Houston Texans team on a pretty big stage. So we'll see how the Cincinnati Bengals season turns out. They may make the playoffs. I still don't know if they'll be able to win that postseason game. But let's focus more on Sheldon Richardson and the defensive line of the Jets and if they're going to be able to bring pressure to T.J. Yates. Sheldon Richardson with the hamstring, questionable, didn't practice most of the week. I don't believe he practiced all week, Amiri, so he'll be more of a game-time decision, says Coach Todd Bowles. That's going to be a big blow to that defensive front. But they played the first four games of the season without him, so they're pretty used to playing in a lineup that doesn't have Sheldon Richardson in the rotation on that defensive line. So that's going to be a fact, but let's see how much of a factor it will be. What will be a factor for the Houston Texans? DeAndre Hopkins, he's dealing with the knee injury. He's a little gimpy, Amiri. We'll see if T.J. Yates will have one of the top performers on the Houston offense around to toss the ball to. It is going to be a big game. It, in my opinion, as well as yours, must win. Some would say it's too early for a must-win game. But if you've got your eyes on a 5 seed, if you've got your eyes on being the top wild card team with as good as New England's playing, Amiri, every game, looking ahead, Dolphins, Giants, Titans, Cowboys with Romo back, then Patriots, then Bills again. This is a must-win game, Amiri.
Definitely, definitely. And you know, you talk about the postseason conversation for the New York Jets. It's slowly becoming an interesting little footnote to this season, or actually not even a footnote. I think this is at week 11 right now. This is where the Jets certainly have to focus on the standings and focus on where they stand in their division. Buffalo, again, as you mentioned, the team that the New York Jets lost to last week propelled themselves up to that 5-4 spot. Now, Buffalo, interestingly enough, takes on the Patriots at New England on Monday night. So this could be a week where the Jets put themselves a leg up against the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, they still are down as far as the tiebreakers are concerned. So that last week, that week 17 game at Buffalo could be a crucial one to determining where the Jets stand in the postseason in the wild card situation, as far as their own division is concerned. But this could be a week if the Jets beat the Texans and Buffalo loses to the dominant New England Patriots. This could be a week where the New York Jets might be able to get a leg up on that Buffalo team. And then looking forward even more to the schedule, the Jets, obviously, as you mentioned, they have a couple of winnable games left. So this is a team, I think, that is in a position right now where they can put themselves in the postseason. Let's do it. Let's do it.
In terms of the Jets, I don't just want to see like kind of a rah-rah mentality. I want to see a kind of focus, and I want to see a Todd Bowles type focus with this team. I don't want to see fumbles or Brandon Marshall being a little loose with the football. This isn't the kind of game for that. This is the kind of game where you go on a business trip, Amiri. You handle your business, okay? You go out there, you put it to the Houston Texans who are starting a quarterback who 3 weeks ago wasn't even on the roster. All right. You go there, you put it to a team like this, then you come home and you get yourself ready for what's going to be considered a pretty tough stretch against a division opponent, someone you need to put in your rear view, and then, of course, a battle at home versus your basically your roommates, the New York Giants. I'm looking at this game, and they've had themselves a couple of chances to put some distance between the Buffalo Bills, especially the game on Thursday. Okay, good win against the Jacksonville Jaguars, but that game on Thursday, I'm really going to look back and say, you know what, New York Jets, you had an opportunity to be able to take game off, but now with the way the schedule is looking, every game is pretty much must win if they want to find themselves playing in the second season.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the way that the Jets have kind of aimed at this season, has, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like this Jets team has been, obviously it's been a roller coaster season to this point, up and down, but it seems like this Jets team for the most part of the year kind of was able to beat the teams that they needed to beat in certain situations, but it hasn't been consistent where the Jets have gotten wins against teams that they needed to beat. Obviously, the loss earlier in the season against the then struggling Eagles kind of put their season at a little bit kind of stifled these 2-0 stars that they had,
yeah.
And they put them in the reality check, I guess, in that game. Mm-hmm. So they lost against the Raiders, obviously they lost against the Bills last week. So I feel like these are the type of games where if you want to be a postseason team, we've talked about this numerous times, day after day. How if you want to be a team that's in the postseason consideration, these are the type of games that you have to win. And so a game at Houston, a 1 o'clock game, you have to win. And there really is no two ways about it. I understand that certain situations might have happened where you were missing a key player or you got two quarterbacks hurt. God forbid that happens again. You know, you're talking about the fact that the Jets want to be in the postseason conversation, which I think you and I would agree that at times they have proven that they can be in that conversation, huh? If you want to be in that discussion, that realm, you have to prove that you can beat teams that you should be able to beat. That means at the Texans. That means next week, home against the Dolphins. That means a couple of weeks from now, home against the Titans. And that even means week 17 at the Bills. You have to be able to beat teams when you need to beat them, and you have to get those clutch victories. I am not convinced that the Jets can do that thus far.
Wow, you skipped the NFC East teams. You think the Jets will struggle against the Giants and the Cowboys? We're not struggling, coming to you each and every Sunday, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Green and White Show, Amiri Tilluk there. Joseph Foss here. Make sure you follow Amiri on Twitter at Amiri Tilluk. You can follow myself on Twitter at Jersey Haas. Got to agree with you, man. Looking forward. You got to understand that this is a game that this is a definite must win. You started to show off right. Here's one thing that's going to be stifling a Jets victory. Let's not forget Willie Colon on IR, so he's done. Brian Winters inserted into the offensive line. Let's not also forget Nick Mangold's been battling this neck injury, keeping him on and off the field. And he got a little practice in, but, you know, still probable to play in the game, and that could be another blow to the offensive line. Don't forget who's going to be on the other end of the line of scrimmage there. You got J.J. Watt on one side. You got Jadeveon Clowney on another. You've got a quarterback who's nursing an injured, you know, off throwing hand, but still an injury nonetheless, Amiri. You got to worry about that. You got to look at protection being a key. You know you're going to have the running backs chipping away on each of these ends before they go out. You know you're going to have the tight end tight to the line of scrimmage to give the tackle as much help as possible. But one of the goals, not just a victory here, but it's to keep Ryan Fitzpatrick upright.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Jets offensive line, I think this season has kind of mirrored the way that the team has performed. You know, it's situations where the Jets have played well, obviously, and they've given Ryan Fitzpatrick time. He's obviously gifted the Jets with productive games, three sacks against the Bills. And Ryan Fitzpatrick was just off the mark completely. And I think that, in and of itself, highlights the different strengths and weaknesses that Ryan Fitzpatrick himself has. I think any quarterback in that situation, whenever you're not able to stay in the pocket for a consistent amount of time to look down the field, of course you're going to be, you know, your play is going to be compromised as a result. But I think it's just interesting that it seems like Ryan Fitzpatrick is in his best situation when he does get, you know, 5-6 seconds in the pocket, but also when he's able to throw down the field from, let's say, 7 to 10 yard distance. So I think there's like a sweet spot with Ryan Fitzpatrick that has began to emerge as a trend through this season. And we've kind of noticed that, Haas, if you've been watching this Jets team as of late, there is a sweet spot with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And there is an area that he excels in more than others. But I think in and of itself, that creates the feeling that the New York Jets are experiencing against other teams, where teams are now locking down against that quote unquote sweet spot that Ryan Fitzpatrick has proven to have this season. So, you know, I think in one respect, the offensive line has a huge impact on that, obviously, because by giving Fitzpatrick more time, you're enabling him to hit that sweet spot. But I feel like I want Ryan Fitzpatrick to be able to make plays without having to throw 7 to 10 yards or without having a pristine amount of time in the pocket. You know, we haven't really seen Ryan Fitzpatrick experience success in situations where his sweet spot wasn't really available, or we haven't really seen him thrive when he wasn't given that short, mid yard route that he's so gifted at completing. So that's the one area that I think as far as the offensive line kind of relates to, that I really want to see Ryan Fitzpatrick pick up his game, especially, again, if this Jets team wants to make it to the postseason. Because at that level, Haas, you know, you're not going to be able to consistently rely on one and only one source of your success.
Yeah, that one source of his success has been, you know, the way he targets Eric Decker, Mary. Him and Eric Decker, obviously, you know, they've got a chemistry. And you know, he's getting a few targets to Brandon Marshall as well, big guy, classic number one wide receiver. But it is going to be using, you know, the third wide receiver. It is going to be, you know, dumping the ball off as well to the backs. What's gone on with Chris Ivory? Remember when we used to just do nothing but talk about him, marvel about him, rave about his ability to not just run hard, but run viciously and just gobble up yards, really keeping the opponent at bay and making them have to kind of, you know, really be honest up front and giving Ryan Fitzpatrick one-on-ones outside, giving Ryan Fitzpatrick the time he needs to get the ball off. Well, now we're just not seeing that same productivity from Chris Ivory and Mary. We're just not seeing it. And I don't know if it's injury lingering or if it's just he's fallen out of favor with the offensive play calling or Chan Gailey or Todd Bowles. I really don't know what it is, but whatever it is, the Jets have to shake it off and get Ivory back to playing like he was in the first 4-5 games of the season, missing the Eagles game, of course, with an injury. But they really need to get him playing like he was in order for this offense to be as good as it was early season. Remember how consistent it seemed to be. At one point, the New York Jets, Amiri, were one of the best red zone efficiency teams in the league. Why? Because they had such a threat running the ball in Chris Ivory. And as you said, Fitzpatrick's ability to connect on the short passes, you know, having Brandon Marshall on the outside as a big target helps as well. But let's see. It all goes back to getting that running game back off its feet. It's not just going to be the runner. There's going to be a problem with the offensive line with new, you know, the insertion of new players, of Brian Winters in, Nick Manglo going in and out. So that's also going to impact the running game. But Chris Ivory's got to get off the sideline, get back behind the line of scrimmage, and go for some positive yards for this offense to really take off.
No doubt about it. I mean, the running game we've seen in for a lot of situations and for, you know, with a lot of teams has really been the indicator of a solid postseason caliber team. When you're able to complement Haas that passing game, as you mentioned, with a solid, consistent running game, it keeps defenses off guard, and it allows for that unpredictability and that spontaneity that you get with a team that is gifted in both realms of the offense. As you just mentioned, I don't think we've seen that thus far consistently with this Jets team. And part of that, again, has to do with the fact that, you know, you've seen the steady reduction in production from guys like Chris Ivory. Bilal Powell has not been as potent as he perhaps could have been this season. And that partially is because of his health as well. But certainly Bilal Powell had a much bigger role with this Jets team last year than he has had thus far this season. And then, you know, also kind of relates to the fact that we've mentioned this couple shows now. The Jets tight end position is really lacking compared to what other postseason caliber teams have, Haas. And while that doesn't directly play into the running game, it plays into the factor that you have to have a versatile offense. And to me, I see Ryan Fitzpatrick, I see Decker, I see Brandon Marshall, who, by the way, has also been struggling as of late. But I feel like that's it. And I feel like it's just Fitzpatrick, Decker, Marshall. And then maybe if you want to insert the big game by an unknown player coming up every so often. But other than that, it seems like this Jets team has just lacked that versatility consistently this season. And earlier in the year, obviously, that wasn't the case, or that would have been a hard case to make because the Jets were able to succeed, as you mentioned, with some of the same key players. But it feels like as the end of the year has come along, the interest in my viewing of this Jets team, the overall structure of this Jets offense has kind of gotten a little stale, and it's gotten a little predictable. And I think that plays a little bit into the fact that the New York Jets have not been able to generate as much offensively. So when you talk about the tight end position, that's an area where you could have at least kept the offense a little fresh, kept the defense on their toes every so often. But we just haven't been able to see that consistently. We haven't been able to see a good tight end on this Jets team in quite some time.
Right, and creativity, it's hard for the offensive coordinator to be creative when you've got skilled players in and out all season long. Ivory missing a game with injury, Fitzy getting injured, getting knocked out, even Geno coming in, getting knocked out. You know, Decker missing a couple of games, Brandon Marshall as well. You know, if I'm not mistaken, missing one game. It's real hard to be creative on the offensive side of the ball with the skilled players popping in and out. But, I couldn't agree with you more, Mary. This is going to be a tough one, and having a predictable offense doesn't make it any easier for the Jets. So let's see if they can add a little creativity to the offense. Here's one instance in which I think that the Jets should really come out and dominate, and that's in the third phase of the game, and that's in special teams, Amiri. I would really like to see this weekend a big play by Jeremy Curley in the special teams department. That would really make me feel good. I would really see the Jets, use that third phase of the game as a part of the attack. I mean, you know, Nick Falk is on IR as well. He's done for the season. The Jets have faced a lot of injuries, Amiri. I mean, no team wants to sit here and use injuries as an excuse, but what team has had more injuries than the New York Jets?
Right. I mean, that's also been one of the huge underlying aspects of this Jets team. I mean, moving to the defense, as we've talked about this for how many weeks, factor of Sheldon Richardson being hurt. We've talked about Antonio Cromartie's injuries concerns. We've talked about the fact that the New York Jets have been missing a couple of players just because they were not available. Muhammad Wilkerson earlier in the year. Brandon Marshall, obviously, on the offensive side again. Eric Decker. It's a couple of key games, a couple of key losses, in fact, that the New York Jets could have benefited with him being healthy. So, and of course, Ryan Fitzpatrick as well, not to mention Geno Smith even, Bilal Powell, as I mentioned earlier. So a lot of the players that you would have expected to have a huge impact, positive impact on this team, as you mentioned, have struggled and have been hurt. But, let's see what they can do moving forward. Let's see if this Jets team can, once they do get maybe some of these guys back on track. I'm not too sure how long Brandon Marshall will be sidelined. I think his situation is a little more ongoing rather than a simple quick fix. But in a situation like a Ryan Fitzpatrick, even an Eric Decker, those injuries have been lasting for a couple of weeks now, Haas, and it's really, you can kind of tell that the New York Jets have not been, again, as I mentioned earlier, at the most productive of their offensive caliber, because again, it's gotten kind of stale without their productive pieces making big impacts.
Right, but despite all the negatives that we've espoused here on the show, I'm still taking the Jets to beat the Texans, and I think the Jets are going to not just beat the Texans, but I think the Jets are going to be able to beat them by 10 plus points, even though it is on the road. That's what I'm telling you. How about other things I told you? I know I told you the Cardinals were good. I know you were listening when I told you that. I know I told you the Panthers were good. I know you were listening when I told you that. I've been telling people all season that Peyton Manning was trending down. I mean, I hope people were listening, because if they were, they wouldn't be surprised by this. I also told the good people that the Jets would finish 8-8. We'll see. They're getting a whole lot closer to that. And by the way, I think I also told people that the Warriors were good. Those Warriors good. How about the Knicks being good? We're going to get with them in ice time with Amiri in a second. But, I mean, I couldn't even wait to say, man, look at those New York Knicks.
Kristaps Porzingis, man.
Get out of here. KP with the shot. Oh, wait. That's Steph's. I can't use that, right? Like I'll get in trouble. unbelievable showing by the New York Knicks. So it's good to have some exciting basketball to talk. Okay, we'll have Antoine Staley joining us at 8:30 with the rest report. We'll talk heavy Dolphins Cowboys there. We're going to have the great Jeff Thurn from Overtime, ESPN 991 in Sioux Falls. He'll be joining us to talk Vikings and Packers. Let's not forget, at the top of the hour, we'll have our good friend Brian Benway on Bigger Batter Benway. We'll talk all sports, great boxing, a little MMA update as well. But right now, we will lead it into, yep, that's it, dropping the puck time. He's getting ready to jump over the boards. We're going to have some ice time with Amiri. Go.
Indeed. So last week we were kind of discussing the interesting shakeup of the Metropolitan Division for the National Hockey League. That's the division that the Rangers, the Islanders, the Devils, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Washington all reside in the Eastern Conference. So the shakeout has continued. It's getting a little bit more widespread as the week has continued. The Rangers still in heavy demand of that Metropolitan Division. They have won 9 out of their last 10 games. It's been a Rangers season thus far in the Eastern Conference, no doubt about it. So they're still number one at 32 points. So they've widened their discrepancy and widened their differential with the rest of the division. Washington comes in next at 27 points. They've had a very solid season thus far. Alexander Ovechkin has been crucial. Has been Alex Ovechkin, really, to put it as frank as possible this season. They have been extremely good when it comes to scoring goals, very solid defensively as well, and they've been able to generate points on the power play, which, as we've seen a lot in recent years, is crucial in the regular season and then even becomes even more important when the postseason comes around. Pittsburgh, though, lies next with the third spot in the Metropolitan Division. They have 24 points, Haas. Similar again to that Washington Capitals team, kind of right in the middle thus far this year. We haven't been able to see too much from that team, but we've been able to obviously see their potency scoring-wise, which is something that I think anytime you have the Pittsburgh Penguins is capable of proving, and especially their goals against the defense for this Pittsburgh Penguins team. And their goaltending obviously has always been solid, and it has continued thus far this year. Now, this is where the division kind of gets a little interesting. Pittsburgh with 24 points, the Islanders with 23, who have kind of hit in a little rough spot in the road. The Devils with 21 points, who my team is 10-8 right now, still nowhere near the top spot in the Metropolitan Division, but they've been holding on for dear life. And then it falls down a little bit to the lower level. Philadelphia with 17, Columbus with 14, Carolina with 15. So as of right now, it's really going to be a mix-up for that main spot in the Metropolitan Division, Haas. It's going to be between the Capitals, the Penguins, the Islanders, and the Devils, and that's going to be how this season progresses. So compared to last week where the division was a lot more tight, compressed, every team was kind of in the same rough general spot, we've seen a little bit of an opening up in this Metropolitan Division, which is very which has been very beneficial for some of the teams like the Rangers to kind of get out and get on that lead early in the season, so they put themselves in prime position for the season to continue. So very quickly, let's make our way outside of the Metropolitan Division, also in the Eastern Conference, in the Atlantic Division. The Montreal Canadiens with 32 points, they have a 7-point lead on the Ottawa Senators, the next closest team in that division. So Montreal, right up there with the New York Rangers as one of the better teams in the National Hockey League. And then moving on to the Western Conference, I think one of the more interesting storylines this season has been how mediocre, I guess is the best term, the Pacific Division has been. So I mentioned earlier, the Rangers with 32 points, they lead the Metropolitan Division. The Canadiens with 32 points, they lead the Atlantic Division. Uh-huh. The Central Western Conference of Division, Dallas leads with 34. The leading team in the Pacific Division is 24 points, Haas, and your San Jose Sharks right up there. So it's been a mediocre division thus far. Your Sharks still have an opportunity because of that mediocrity to potentially make a run. But as far as the Western Conference is concerned, Dallas has the most points in the National Hockey League right now, so that's far and away the better conference, or better division, rather, in that conference. Just been interesting to note how lagging behind the Pacific has been, considering you normally get teams like Vancouver always perennially as one of the better teams in the league. And, of course, Los Angeles, a Stanley Cup champion a couple times over recently, Haas. But that just about does it for the NHL standings. We'll, of course, check in next week.
Another strong shift by Amiri Tillich. I'm telling you, ice time with Amiri, definitely on. Loving it. And he got a little Sharks play in there as well. So, you know, I'm enjoying it. Green and White Show. Amiri Tillich there. Joseph Haas here. Let's hit a quick Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout and get the rest of the show going. Amiri, back on. Go, my man.
Indeed, Haas. Listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week over at jgsportstalk.com. That is at jgsportstalk on Twitter as well. And, of course, at Amiri Tillich. That is AmiriTullo.
Hey, they can catch me on HostileInterpretations.com. That's HAASSTYLE Interpretations.com. My inbox is your inbox, so hit me up anytime, JosephHaasNFL@gmail.com. You know I'm online 24/7, so hit me up on Twitter @JerseyHaas. And working capital, you need it. Amiri, told you, we're doing great things at Cast Capital. We're getting small to mid-sized businesses funded, refinancing loans, unsecured, secured loans. They need it. We got it. Hit me up, Joseph at CastCapitalFunding.com. Dude, we're getting noticed. We're also getting noticed here on the Green and White Show. Like we said before, Amiri Tuluk there, Joseph Haas here. Let's get right into the rest report, being joined again by a guy who covers the Dolphins and covers them well, at Antoine Staley on Twitter, and you can catch him here now on the Green and White Show. Mr. Antoine Staley, what's up, man? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, Twan?
Much appreciated. Twan is in the house. Much appreciated. We know you've got Dolphins today, and you know what? How come the Dolphins aren't the biggest story in this game? Yep, it's Tony Romo. Rejoining the Dallas Cowboys live. Antoine, give us a quick skinny on the Dallas versus Cowboys game. And you know what? Give us a little bit more Dolphins than Cowboys. I've been hearing about the Cowboys all week.
Well, yeah, of course, Tony Romo is the more remarkable name. Of course, the Cowboys, you know, so that obviously America's team, depending on who you ask. But for most people, that's, you know, this America's team, everybody, the Cowboys are very popular. So, of course, he's going to get a number of the headlines. But, you know, for the Dolphins, it's a big game for them, too, especially with them winning last week. You know, good comfort behind victory over the Eagles. They're still, you know, mathematically alive for the playoffs. So they need a win this week, and they got the Jets on next Sunday. So they definitely need to get this win, especially since they're going to be on the road. In particular, they got 5 out of their last 7 games at home, and this would be a good way to kick off that stretch, honestly. Because they did something that no other team has ever done in NFL history, and that's played only two of the first nine games, in their home stadium. And remember, the London game was designated for the Dolphins, but it was, of course, in London.
So let me ask you this then about this Dolphins team. Do you think, as far as their talent, their caliber, just how they played X's and O's wise, are they a postseason team, or are they just potentially might get in because of the standing situation?
I don't think so. I don't think they're a postseason team, but they still, like I said, they're mathematically alive. The problem the Dolphins face is they lose a lot of the tiebreakers because, one, they don't have a divisional win over anybody, which – that, like I say, they need to win this game, and two, they're going to have to beat the Jets next week. If they lose that game, then it's pretty much a wrap from that point, because their only divisional game would be New England at the end of the year, and I don't think anybody's going to count them beating the Patriots. But even then, they would still lose a lot of the tiebreakers, including the Bills, who swept them this year, and they would lose against the Jets, that tiebreaker as well. So I wouldn't say they're a playoff team, but
– right, right. Now, as far as the rest of this AFC East is concerned, the postseason wild card situation has definitely played out. You know, the Jets are in a position right now where they're kind of knotted up with the Buffalo Bills. How about the rest of the AFC? Do you think the Jets and or the Bills have a shot at potentially making that wild card, just from what you've seen from the rest of the AFC, but also from those two teams specifically?
Sure. You look at the rest of the – I mean, you got the rest of the division. The rest of the AFC, I mean, the Bills are looking like they're ascending in the right direction. The Steelers are the team I think is going to get – I think the Steelers are going to get one of the spots, and then the other spot is still kind of up for grabs. You got Buffalo, obviously, Kansas City and the AFC West. The Raiders still have a chance right there. Houston, you know, believe it or not, they still have a chance. And, of course, you got the Dolphins and Jets as well. So, yeah, I think it's just kind of a lot of teams kind of – for that second spot, I think it kind of – they're all the same. They're not necessarily very good teams. They're just kind of – it's just a particular way of the NFL that, you know, got a lot of mediocre teams this particular year. So, yeah, they definitely have a shot. It's going to be one of those things where we just have to wait and see for the next month, see how things shake out.
Well, never at a loss for words when he joins us. Antoine Staley on the program, Green and White. Jeremy to look there. Joseph Haas here. More Cowboys and Dolphins. So last time we had you on, Antoine, I asked you pretty point blank if the Dolphins organization is really looking towards Ryan Tannehill as their starting quarterback, and not just their starting quarterback for now, but are looking at him as kind of their future. Looking at how the Dallas Cowboys basically fell apart without Tony Romo, what do you think? Do you think they're looking towards Ryan Tannehill and saying, hey, look, this is our future. We're not just – and not just what you're hearing, but what, with your own eyes as well. Do you still think Ryan Tannehill is the future of the Miami Dolphins?
That's still yet to be determined, honestly. I mean, he's going to have to be there another year. They signed him to such a big deal. But they can't get out of it after two years. So it's really going to depend on who the next head coach is. That's pretty much the bottom line. And just does he have faith in what Ryan Tannehill likes to do and his strengths to the offense that he brings in? Because I have a feeling I don't think Dan Campbell's going to be the head coach unless the Dolphins go on some kind of run and make the playoffs. So I would have to say that. You know, I don't know. I mean, it just really depends on who the next head coach is going to be at the Dolphins. And like I say, if they like Tannehill or not. I do think they're going to draft somebody just simply because Matt Moore is going to be their backup. Is going to be a free agent. So I expect, depending on how the year shakes out, that they will draft somebody and just kind of groom them as a backup and maybe the potential started down the line.
Can I just piggyback off that one real quick? Because I do want to ask if the Dolphins have already made their mind up, kind of that Campbell doesn't look like he's going to be the coach going forward, and they have somebody in mind. Why is it that they don't, no matter how good Campbell does, they don't just go ahead with the person that they have in mind? I'm going to give an example, and I don't know if everybody else notices this as well. But when you're watching NFL football, or basically any football, I mean, this goes to college too. You know, whenever, you know, when an offensive player gets a penalty, you know, blase, sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. But I swear to you, about 95% of the time, when a defensive player commits a penalty, whether it's pre-snap or during the play, that defensive player comes out off the field for a play. If it's pre-snap and the guy's lined up on the defensive line, he commits defensive offsides, why has he got to come to the sideline? He was in on that play. You haven't run it yet. You know, like I don't, but that's what I'm saying is, why is it that people just do things that they just see other people doing, or that becomes normal, or why is it that just because Campbell and the Miami Dolphins may have a little bit of a run, that if the organization has a game plan now and sees, you know, their next head coach out there, why is it that they would put that plan on hold just because Campbell and the organization and the football team made a little run? Why not take into consideration the fact that the teams around the Dolphins, maybe the Jets, maybe the Bills, maybe the Cowboys, you know, slipped a little bit and allowed the Dolphins to win? I just wanted to ask you that question. Do you agree with or disagree with me that whether or not they have their guy now should impact whether or not Campbell, or how Campbell does, should impact whether or not they should go out and get the guy they have now in mind?
I think they really, looking back on it, I think they wanted Campbell to win the job, and they believe. I remember the press conference after they fired Philbin and Mike Tannenbaum, who Jets fans know very well.
Right.
He ended up saying that they expected the team still to make the playoffs, so they had playoff aspirations, which is you bring in an interim coach. After three or four games, it's hard, especially when they were 1-3. So they had expectations of them making the playoffs and still having a special year. Now I did not think they were going to make the playoffs. It's very difficult to come in that situation. I think just what Dan has done is he's done a really good job in such a short time. So it's going to be he has the team just playing and very motivated, and the players love him. Absolutely love playing for him because he's very direct and says how he feels, and he's a player, so they can relate to that. So I think they're giving him a fair chance to win the job. I just don't know if long term, especially with the lack of experience he has, and he's shown that at times during games, like he's kind of learning on the fly how to be a head coach. Not saying he won't. I think one day he will be a head coach in the league. I just don't know if it's going to be for the Dolphins in 2016.
Campbell, a former player, rallying his Miami Dolphins. Antoine's not a player, but he analyzes a lot. And always available for us on the Green and White Show. Yo, Antoine, really appreciate you. Have a great game out there. Enjoy it. Wishing you the best. You know, Romo coming back. You know it's going to be a crazy, crazy game. So enjoy the game. Can't wait to have you back on the program, buddy.
All right, dude. Y'all take care.
Thanks
all
again.
Right, thank you.
All right.
Remember, you can follow Antoine Staley on Twitter, at Antoine Staley. Does a great job covering the Miami Dolphins. And always, you know, always ready to play backup quarterback on the rest report and jump in and go heavy Dolphins for us. So much appreciated there. Hey, he gave his take on the Dolphins, Amiri. I want to give you a chance as well to give a little back and forth on the Miami Dolphins as we're here. The Cowboys are going to have to make some kind of run to qualify for the playoffs. Now, just the same way the Houston Texans have a chance at the postseason is the same chance that the Dallas Cowboys have at the postseason. Okay, but they've got to start winning. Both teams have to start winning. So if this is a big game for them, both teams have to look at this as a must-win.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the ways that the Texans in and of itself have kind of come up from the grounds and when the way that they've performed is contradicted to the New York Jets, this is the AFC house right now where this postseason, I was just looking at the standings while Twan was talking. I mean, this AFC has kind of contributed to a situation where there's like four or five teams in the wild card spot right now, and they're all in the same general gist. The Steelers right now, 6-4, so it looks like they have one spot, at least for now, wrapped up. But the second spot is tight. The Texans are in the conversation. Obviously, Kansas City is in the conversation. Oakland even is in the conversation. Throw a team like Jacksonville. Exactly. Throw a team like Jacksonville in the conversation as well. So there's a lot of of course, Buffalo as well in their same division, not to mention Miami. So there's a ton of teams right now that the New York Jets are vying for one spot with, essentially one spot with at this point in time. So there's no doubt about it. This week, this game for the New York Jets will be crucial. Let's see whether or not they can mark up to the challenge. And I certainly think Todd Bowles and the team is cognizant of the fact that every single game right now, from now until the end of the season, is essentially a victory or a must-win game. So this is certainly high odds, high expectations, but this is the type of game against the Houston Texans you need to come out with a win so you can keep the season moving, keep things going, keep things rolling in a positive direction.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You're looking at this, Ed. It's not just – let's not forget, man. Let's not be so quick to pencil in the Pittsburgh Steelers, okay? I mean, they're just another Ben Roethlisberger tweak away from having Mike Vick start again, and we saw what happened the last time. So, I mean, let's not forget Landry Jones getting injured, and that's how Big Ben gets in the game to begin with. Big Ben coming off an injury as well. So let's not be so quick to pencil in the Steelers. But what you did say is completely accurate. Crazy wild card situation over in the AFC, and it's going to be fun watching that come down to the wire with a bunch of those teams playing each other late in the season, you know, highlighted by, of course, Jets, Bills. See who can take that one. So lots of conversation to talk about. Can't wait to have the great Jeff Dern on as well from Overtime. He's going to come on. We're going to talk a little Vikings and Packers, and let's see if we're burying the Packers. Like, I've been on here burying Peyton Manning for quite a while. We've gone this far without talking a little Denver Broncos, but, you know, elephant in the room, Peyton Manning, you know, injured, being set. Osweiler's going to get the start. Got any opinion on Peyton Manning? You know what mine is. I'm saying, hey, you know, it's all, I mean, you know, it's so hard to say goodbye. That's the last time I'll sing on the show. Promise.
Peyton Manning. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I think Peyton Manning has certainly is on his last leg. I think anybody that has seen him is certainly in agreement of that. I just think the way that this season has kind of progressed has been very rocky. I think from the start, I wonder how many people in that Broncos organization perhaps saw this at the start of the season. I don't know if there were any signs either at the start of the year, but I don't think this season, and here's my only conclusion. I don't think this season should do anything for Peyton Manning's legacy. I hope that when we remember Peyton Manning, similar to how I hope we remember Brett Favre, we don't remember the times he tried to come back. Because that was, in and of itself, that showed a love for the game that I think, you know, we should respect as NFL fans, especially in a diamond age where players are often doing it for money, players are often doing it for their own personal glory. Seems like Peyton Manning is all about the game, and I think that's indicative by the fact that he's still trying out here at age 40, 39, 39. He's still
38, 37, leave him alone now.
Still trying to win.
You keep trying to tag years out of Peyton. He's going to come get you, man.
Yeah, I mean, I just think when it all said and done, I think we should remember these last few years with the Broncos as not indicative of what he is as a player, as a quarterback. And while it certainly ends poorly, I hope we don't remember this year and hold it against him as far as his legacy is concerned. If anything, Haas, this should be counting as a sign of his love for the game, no doubt about it.
You know, when they thought Brett Favre, after his many comebacks, was really coming back one game too many or one season too many, and he came back with the Vikings. So I know that Jeff isn't going to forget any of the times that Brett Favre came back, but when he came back that year with the Vikings and they were oh so close, and you're like, wow, did you really think he had this much left in him? I think Peyton Manning's going to have, and I don't want to sound like I'm flip-flopping on this, but I think he's going to have one last song and dance in him, but that will be his last hurrah. I didn't say that he was done. I did say he was trending down, and trending down doesn't exactly mean that he doesn't have an opportunity to trend up just one more time before he trends down and out for good. So I think there's still one good song and dance left in Peyton Manning's bag of tricks there, but it is kind of sad that, you know, he still was trying to get the most wins. He still won away from the most wins, you know what I mean? And to see that, you know, he didn't get the game against the Colts, and then to see how badly and how poorly he played, I mean, to get honored after he makes his first completion, of course, because he breaks the yards records, then goes out and throws four interceptions. You know that can't be the best of feelings for a guy like Peyton Manning. So We're gonna be able to see a guy that, okay, let him rehab up, let him get, if it's injury, fine. But I'd love to see one last hurrah from Peyton Manning. You know what, Amiri? I won't want to call it one last hurrah. I want to call it one of many joining us on the program today. Okay, the host of Overtime with Jeff Dern, definitely 99.1 ESPN, Sioux Falls. Come on, they're the sports leader. If you don't know, you better recognize our buddy Jeff Dern. Follow him on Twitter at JTESPN991. I know I got that right. Jeff Dern joining us. Jeff, how are you, my man?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, it's a great morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Really appreciate you, my man. I know, hey, and everybody, much appreciated getting him up mad early in his time zone. So totally appreciate it, my man. Check it out. We've got a great game going on in your neck of the woods. Minnesota Vikings looking to take a stranglehold on the division. Got to beat the big boys to do it, you know what I mean? So it's Minnesota, Green Bay. I don't know who's been wearing that Aaron Rodgers jersey the last three or so weeks, but it's time for them to get Superman back, and let's see if he puts the championship belt on for a game. What do you think? Vikings, Green Bay. Jeff, what are your thoughts?
You know, guys, I think it's going to be another great game in this rivalry. It's actually going to be the 110th time that these two teams have hooked up since 1961. So I always consider, you know, and it depends, I guess, geographically where you live. But for me, Minnesota, Green Bay, best rivalry in all of the NFL, the fans, the proximity, the passion. Think about all the great names over the years that we've seen in this rivalry, from Fran Tarkington to Randy Moss to Donald Driver to Chris Carter, and even Brett Favre playing for both teams throughout his career during this rivalry. But for today, we have some new faces. Obviously, Teddy Bridgewater in his second year in this rivalry. Adrian Peterson didn't play the Green Bay Packers last year for the Minnesota Vikings, obviously out with that suspension. So I think we look at this game, man, and there's really a couple of things that I look at. First of all, what's been successful for the Minnesota Vikings so far? That is putting Teddy Bridgewater in opportune situations. Those include setting him up with great play action passes. You look at what Adrian Peterson is on right now for a rushing pace. He's actually on a rushing pace that will put him past the year where he went over 2,000 yards. So, you know, this offense really is predicated by setting up the pass with the run, and we'll see if they're able to do that offensively. But, yeah, guys, you know, you bring up the great point there, Joseph, in regards to Aaron Rodgers. What Aaron Rodgers will we see today? The imposter over the last 3 weeks, or will we see the Aaron Rodgers that will be in the Hall of Fame someday?
Mm. Now, when you talk about the situation that the Packers have right now, Haas and I have been talking about the postseason shakeup in the AFC, but we haven't really touched on the NFC much. The Minnesota Vikings put together a very solid season, 7-2 right now. The Packers as well, 6-3. They've lost their last three. How crucial is this game from the postseason standpoint? If let's say Minnesota continues and they win, do you still believe that this Green Bay Packers team has a shot at making the postseason?
Well, at that point, they'd be two games back, because right now, if Minnesota wins today, they'll have the two-game lead, and they'll have the advantage in the head-to-head. In this series, I mean, if you go back and look, it's actually a little bit in favor of Green Bay, but typically each year you see a split. So I would assume that the game in Green Bay would probably fall in the Packers' way. But either way, getting that first one so important just for momentum perspective. And I think, guys, when you look at this matchup with Green Bay, they're trying to find their identity offensively. We all know without Jordy Nelson, this isn't the same offense. You know, talking to a member of the Green Bay Packers staff last week, they said the biggest problem that they're seeing is something that Aaron Rodgers has been public about, the fact that when they have Jordy Nelson on the field, they get a double team on the outside. But when they just have Randall Cobb on the field, they're just getting a double team on the inside at the slot position. And it's not the same defenses that Aaron Rodgers would see if he had Jordy Nelson getting doubled on the outside. He's used to seeing that two-shell defense when Jordy Nelson is double-teamed on the outside. They're not getting that now. They're getting the double team with the safety, either high or low, on Cobb. And it just doesn't give them as many options offensively. Plus, you've had Eddie Lacy and James Stark going back and forth at the running back position, somewhat due to injury, somewhat due to production. So, yeah, I would say to answer your original question, if those things that I just mentioned get turned around, yeah, Green Bay, I mean, they got the baddest man on the planet playing quarterback, so I would assume that they can get back on track with Aaron Rodgers in this offense.
We're here with Jeff Thurn again on the Green and White Show. Joseph Hassamiri Tella here breaking down this NFC postseason shakeup, but also the National Football League Week 11 set to begin later today on Sunday night or Sunday period. Let me ask you a question then about this Green Bay Packers team a little more in depth then. When you talk about, Haas mentioned earlier, the interesting season that Aaron Rodgers has had, what is the pulse like in that area from what you can kind of ascertain? What is the pulse like in that area, especially not only from the Green Bay perspective, but also from the elation, I assume, of Minnesota Viking fans who for the first time in quite some time are in a prime position right now? What's the pulse like in that area of America right now?
I would say for the Green Bay Packers, it's not quite to the point where Aaron Rodgers has to publicly come out again and go, I, Packers fans, R-E-L-A-X, relax. I don't think it's to that point. I remember last year they started 1-2 and everybody was up in arms and he had to tell the fans to calm down. I would say that right now I think that they are just wanting to see against a team like Minnesota, who has the spot right now as first place in the division. How does the Green Bay Packers team come out on the road? I think today is going to be a big barometer on to maybe the pulse of what the Packers fans feel. I'm in Minneapolis right now, and I've been here since Friday. We did our radio show Friday. And I just think you see sort of what Packers fans, when you talk to them in the hallways or talk to them in the elevators, it's not the same confidence that we've seen maybe from a Packers team mid-season or at this point last year. It's something that maybe they aren't as accustomed to, is sort of that uncertainty in regards to where they might fall, as you guys mentioned, with the NFC playoffs. But on the flip side of things, it's even funnier to talk to Vikings fans, because you would think ultimate confidence, right? You're in first place. This team has played better than they have since Brett Favre was the quarterback. And that's not the case. They're cautiously optimistic. Vikings fans are just like Clemson Tiger fans. They're just like other fans that have been burned before. They're like Cubs fans. They know it sometime. The clock is going to hit midnight and the fairy tale is going to be over. They've seen it so many times in so many different scenarios play itself out over the years. When they have momentum, somehow, some way, it goes away. So I would say they're cautiously optimistic. You would think they'd be more confident, but at the end of the day, they've seen this before, a Vikings team giving them some hope, but eventually having that hope just taken away. So we'll see how they do, but I'm telling you guys, going into this season, we talked to a lot of Vikings players on my show, and they all said, we're going to have a great defense. We'll see how far Teddy Bridgewater is able to progress. But with Mike Zimmer, we're always going to be in games. And that's what you see from this football team, a chance to win games, and they've done so.
You know what, Jeff, definitely a great take on the Viking and Green Bay Packer game. I want to take it a little somewhere else, and Chris Carter gets to see. I don't get to have a show 5 days a week. We only get to do this party on Sundays. Love my party on Sundays. But if I did, Chris Carter steals my thunder midweek. I wanted to ask you, and going to ask you now, with the injury to Julian Edelman, it makes it even more clear, but, you know, Jordy Nelson being out and how it impacts the Green Bay Packers and how it's made super Aaron Rodgers look very, very human. I really got to ask you this question. Are are the Edelmans of the world, are the Jordy Nelsons, who are spectacular pass catchers and definitely impact their teams in a great way. Are they not respected a lot, or do they not get the fanfare from fans and not respected by other teams because they're white?
You know, man, I think this is a great topic because we've had this conversation before. I'm a white dude from the Midwest, and I have always been under the impression that, in fact, sometimes when white dudes perform well on an athletic field, they actually sometimes get more credit than they deserve. And I'm going to point somebody out that drives people absolutely crazy when I say this, but think about in the 80s, in the NBA world, when Larry Bird and Magic Johnson were
I knew you were going there, buddy.
And I'm going this direction because I think Larry Bird is a great basketball player. But in my opinion, Larry Bird is not a top 10 basketball player in the history of the game. And you could argue and make arguments that he's not a top 15 player. But I think the great white hype that was Larry Bird got him to the heights that he is as far as popularity is concerned. In the 80s, if you were growing up in black America, you were cheering for Magic Johnson. If you were growing up in white America, you were attaching yourself to Larry Bird. Plus, during that time, you had sort of this phase in the NBA to where you saw more people getting opportunities from different backgrounds. And, you know, I think you saw the evolution of the game going to more of a broad perspective where some people that you wouldn't have seen in your living room before were in your living room and they were playing great basketball and they weren't getting as much credit as maybe a Larry Bird. So I think it's actually valid that, you know, you could argue that some guys that are white, that don't look athletic, that go out there and perform, it surprises people and people jump on the bandwagon and go nuts. And I don't think that Tim Tebow got all the credit that he deserved at times because – you know, they had this sort of big godly Christian moniker around him that people, some would attach to, some wouldn't. But at the end of the day, when you look at Tim Tebow, don't think for a second, man, that he didn't get as much publicity as he did because he wasn't white. I think because he was white, a lot of people attached themselves to him, and they just thought, you know, he could do no wrong in certain situations because of his Christian background. But for the more part, man, he was a clean-cut, you know, middle class, you know, guy that people could attach themselves to. And I think, you know, when Chris Carter says that, I think Chris Carter at times makes a good point on one side, but at the other side of things, I think sometimes it can go the other direction to where they're overhyped because of their skin color. And I mean, it's unfortunate that that's something we're talking about, let's be real, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're purple, green, black, white, whatever, man. If you can play football, basketball, baseball, and you're at that level, we're going to like you because of what you do on the field. But at the end of the day, I think there are arguments. And just look, man, I mean, we all can agree. This world is not perfect. And I think this is something, though, that is a very valid debate between people. And, you know, people get all up in arms about something like this comment from Chris Carter. But at the end of the day, guys, I think that there's some validity to it on both sides.
Yeah, I tell you what, I don't think Cowboys fans care too much what color Tony Romo is. They just care that he's under center for the Cowboys this week after the last 6-7 game. Jeff Third joining us on the program. Hey, before we let you go, dude, I wanted to touch on so many things before we let you go. I got two ways to go. I got college football or I got boxing last night. College football, the state of Michigan going absolutely nuts, and, of course, Cotto Alvarez. Which one you want?
Give me college football, man.
I knew it. You're a big, huge college football fan, Jeff Third. Okay, so Michigan squeaks one out. Michigan State squeaks one out. Oklahoma squeaks one out. Man, Iowa State's undefeated, man. What are you thinking with this college football playoff?
You know, it's great because I was always a big BCS proponent. I trust computers more than I trust humans, so I always liked the fact that the computers were involved. But now that we have the playoff, it's clearly more intriguing to the masses, and you just see the momentum heading in the final week of the college football season, not to mention the following week with championship week. I think it's interesting because we could have a scenario, guys, where we get to a point where North Carolina beats Clemson in the ACC championship game, and they could be in. Florida could beat Alabama in the SEC championship game, and they could be in. Notre Dame could stay pat and win their final game against Stanford, and they could be in. And then you would end up, if Iowa beat either Michigan State or Ohio State or Michigan or whoever they play in the Big Ten championship game, you could eventually have Iowa, North Carolina, Notre Dame, and Florida, and you could have maybe four of the best teams in the country, like Alabama, Clemson, and one of those other Big Ten teams out of the mix. It just adds so much upheaval if certain things happen and four teams could be involved instead of just two like we had with the BCS system. So I'll tell you what, man, yesterday was a blast. I love sitting back. I cheer for storylines more than I cheer for teams. And when you have chaos like we had yesterday, I mean, think if Oklahoma doesn't, you know, think if they don't stop TCU on that two-point play at the end and TCU yeah. wins that game. And then we're talking about, like, maybe Baylor as the outside team in the Big 12. Now Oklahoma has a chance to get in. I mean, next week is going to be great. The following week is going to be great. You know, let's be honest, man. NFL's great. I know your fans out there probably love the NFL more, but there's one sport that's God's sport, and it's college football, and I absolutely love it, man.
We always absolutely love it when you follow him on Twitter, JTEFPN991, and also him on Overtime, Monday through Friday, guys, 3 to 6 p.m. Remember that Central Time, guys. Always appreciate having you on, man. I can't wait to jump on Overtime again. Until then, Jeff, enjoy your college football Saturdays, and I know you're going to enjoy this NFL Sunday.
Yeah, you guys as well, man. You guys do a great job. Thanks so much for the time today.
Hey, Jeff, make sure you hug the little man for me. Say hi to the missus.
Will do, man. Take care, guys.
You Thanks. Got it. Bye-bye. Like we said, Jeff Turner joining us on the program. Uh-oh. What I'm going to do now is throw it to you for a quick Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout, and then we're going to get our next guest back on the program. That'll be the great Brian Benway. This is the Green and White Show. Amiri Tilla, go.
Yes, sir. The listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week over at jgsportstalk.com. That is at jgsportstalk on Twitter and and at Amiri Tilla, AmiriTulloch, as well. Huh?
Hey, this is don't forget, you can find me on HostileInterpretations.com. You can find me on Twitter at Jersey Haas. You can also hit my inbox, JosephHaasNFL@gmail.com. Ready, top of the hour. You know what that means. It's 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, but that also means it's time for Bigger, Badder, Benway. So joining us on the program, follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not with an I, fellas. The great Brian Benway. Brian, it's been a crazy sports weekend already, and we haven't even gotten to Sunday yet. What's up, buddy?
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Oh, we're doing well, man. I mean, I'm awoke. I'm full of energy. I'm full of pep. We got a whole list of things to talk about, but I wanted to get started with one of your favorite sports. Oh, wait. Can we talk about the Houston Rockets losing to the No. We won't talk about that. Can we talk about TCU losing to Oklahoma? No. We won't talk about that. We'll talk about Cotto versus Alvarez. Tell me you got to see some of that. Another great fight. Another great now, Cotto getting docked $3 million for getting stripped of a belt for not putting up, what was it, $300,000 just to be able to represent that belt in the ring? I don't get that. Oh, what's going on with boxing? I mean, are they ever going to get it right? I mean, we had two girls fight for like 4 minutes, and everybody was talking MMA for a week. When's boxing going to get it right?
I'll tell you what, though, guys. Last night was a heck of a fight. And actually, when I used to work for Yahoo Sports, you know I worked in Vegas a lot. I actually got to cover four Canelo fights, including the big one with Floyd Mayweather several years ago. But I was looking forward to last night's fight for a while. I thought it was a great matchup. I loved the way Canelo and Cotto on paper were going to look. And if you watched the fight last night, it was really entertaining. It was Canelo was at his best. Cotto, I thought, was pretty good, too. It was entertaining. I had Canelo winning probably 8-4, 7-2. I'm losing my math here. 8-4 and 7-5 on a scorecard. I thought Canelo won the fight for sure. He was the aggressor. And you look at the speed, the quickness, and I think Canelo looked a little bit bigger last night, too. I, like I've said on this show before, I think he's the future of boxing, or one of the big future stars. He's great to watch. And if you've never been to a Canelo Alvarez fight, the atmosphere that his fans bring is really intense. He has a lot of the Mexican folks that come up wherever he goes and watch him. A lot of Hispanic folks go, and they love to party. They love to party, and that's why I used to love to work those Canelo Alvarez fights, just because the atmosphere was awesome. I love the way Canelo performs. I think he's a fantastic boxer. But as far as Cotto goes, that's on him. That's on him not wanting to pony up the dough because he was a tad bit overweight. But really, he made, what, $12, $15 million last night? What's $300,000 to, you know, pay that penalty? But now Canelo has a belt back, first time in a couple of years that he has a championship belt. I thought boxing got it right. I have no problem with him being docked the money or being docked all that stuff. You've got to come in shape and ready to go. And Cotto wasn't, so I'm okay with that. But I thought if you watched the fight last night, one of the better fights that we've seen from boxing in a little bit.
All right. Boxing will get it right if they get Golovkin in the ring with Canelo Alvarez. And I mean pronto. Ahora. Like quick, fast.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I'm hoping that we can see that fight. That's the one. I mean, who else is he going to go after in this day and age? You want to make sure that you keep it on a hot streak as far as boxing goes. You had a ton of people. And I saw a lot of people on social media. I was out and about last night, as you would expect, in the restaurant and bar scene area. And there was a lot of different places that I was going in and out of that were showing the fight. And there was a lot of interest in it. Now, a lot of that is probably where I live in the San Antonio area, which is heavily Hispanic. So that's a Canelo Alvarez fan base. So that might be a little bit where I live. But on social media, I had a lot of friends from New York State, where I'm from, that were watching the fight. I had other friends in parts of Texas, California, Florida. A lot of people were watching the fight. So a lot of people like Canelo across the country. Of course, internationally, he's well known. So, but to continue the momentum, you have to have him fight GGG. I want to see it happen. Did you hear what he said last night, though, Canelo? He said
no.
He'll fight him right away. He'll fight him right away, but he has to agree to everything that Canelo wants as far as weight class, glove size, all of that stuff. So he pulled a Floyd Mayweather demanding all of that stuff. I'm okay with that. I say give Canelo whatever he wants because he's one of these guys that's going to carry boxing. He's only, what, 24, 25 years old? He's going to carry this sport or be one of the guys that carry it for a while. So I'm hoping we get to see that fight, and I'm hoping we don't have to wait too long. You know when we should see that fight is the next big Mexican holiday, which is, I believe, going to be the one in May, Cinco de Mayo. So I think that'd be great. That might be a little bit too long for us to wait for a fight. Usually there's a big fight around February or March-ish, so maybe we'll see it then. I'm hoping we see it sooner rather than later.
I agree there.
Well, my boxing expertise is very limited, but let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question, then I'll kind of pose this to both you, Haas, and of course to both Brian as well. When you talk about the publicity, it's probably the most interesting aspect of boxing. I'm captivated to the publicity that boxing has potentially with some of these players. Which of the boxers that you've kind of seen hit the forefront of the conversation, which of those do you think has the best opportunity to really be marketized and publicized to everyday people like me who maybe don't focus on boxing on a day-in, day-out basis?
Oh, I was letting Hoss go first on that one.
I want to hear what you have to say.
What
boxing really has to do is get the best fighters in the ring at the right time. I don't see Alvarez Golovkin, and I don't wait 6 months for it. You know, I'll wait three. And I believe he'll wait in three. I know February's, the time for the. I want to see good young fighters fighting at the peak of their talent. Go through what I've gone through in my life, where it's like, listen, Bo, don't get the ring. You know, the last minute, or you get holy victim, but look how long it took before they finally got the ring. I'm good fight in the ring at the peak of their talent, and that's what I feel that boxing doesn't get right. That the MMAs of the world get right. What do you think, Brian?
Well, the big difference between MMA and boxing, and exactly what you are talking about, is that you've got a committee, so to speak, in the UFC. You've got Dana White. You have the guys that make the fight cards. So it's kind of like, and I'm going to compare it to the WWE for a second. Now, obviously, I know It's scripted, but you kind of have people that are on a writing team, so to speak, with the UFC. They know they're all on the same page because they all work for the UFC. Boxing is very much different. You have your different promotions. You've got Golden Boy Promotions. You've got Mayweather Promotions. You've got all the other promotions out there. So then you get to the point of, okay, one promotion wants the fight to be this day, this place. Then you want the other promotion. They're going to have different ideas of what they want. So you're basically shooting yourselves in the foot where you have boxers who are being promoted by different guys and by different promotions. So it takes a little bit longer because negotiations are a little bit tougher. On the other end, you've got UFC. Dana White is the boss. Those fighters work for the UFC and Dana White. There's not going to be another promotion that's negotiating for a fight with a different fighter. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, yeah, I get it. I mean, I see how the politics of boxing works. I just can't say I agree with it too much. You know, it's just I want to see the good fighters in the ring against the good fighters and not have to wait through all the negotiation phases, we'll call it.
Well, I'm with you. Yeah, no, I'm with you. But you know who we can probably put our hats on, Amiri, for a guy that we all can get behind as far as a boxer goes? Mm-hmm. Michael B. Jordan playing in the movie Creed. That's America's next boxer coming up here.
Nice. That is going to be a good one. I can't wait to see that one as well. That one's coming out Thanksgiving weekend as well.
I'm pumped for that.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking I might like pack a leftovers lunch, or I hope they're serving something really. You know, I don't want popcorn on that weekend. I want cornbread and dressing. Okay, serve that at the movie theater, and I'm there on Friday. All right, now let me get to some college football for you, my man, because you know they had a huge Notre Dame versus BC battle up at Fenway, converting the baseball park into a football stadium. It looked really nice. Notre Dame not looking very nice in the fourth quarter, maybe damaging their hopes of making the Final Four. The Citadel damaging South Carolina. Can you believe the Citadel goes in and beats an SEC team? Florida Atlantic almost does the same. It takes overtime for the Gators to come out of that one. So the SEC does this every year where they take this week and they play a bunch of FCS teams. And, you know, one of them almost gets knocked off, or one of them gets knocked off every year. For $1 million, these teams play. Is it a good idea or a bad idea for NCAA football to do these, I don't know if you want to call them bounty games or banquet games or just, you know, check games, whatever you want to call them. Is this a great idea for college football?
I think it's stupid. And you know what? I was actually having the same exact conversation at one of the places I was at last night with a whole bunch of friends. And I was on the side of, I think this is absolutely an asinine idea. This is the, third to last week of the regular season. You've got a lot of other great matchups across the country. Why would you want to put throwaway games in this week? I get that the SEC teams most of the time are going to rout these other teams. It's terrible to watch. I get that the smaller schools want to make $1 million. I get it. But as a fan, what's the point of it? I don't get it. I think it's stupid. It's like if you want to put an example for Major League Baseball or the NBA or the NFL, right? Let's say the NFL in week 15 all of a sudden said, all right, every NFL team in week 15 is going to play a Canadian Football League team. It's going to be throwaway week. Let's see how that's going to work. In the NBA, in game 80 out of 82, it's like saying, all right, tonight all the NBA teams are going to play D-League teams. You get what I'm saying? I think it's absolutely stupid. I hate it. I know there are people that are sitting there that are watching these games saying, oh, I'm hoping for an upset. Yeah, and we got one, but then let's face it, South Carolina's not that great this year. But when you look at this as a whole, I think it is an absolutely stupid idea. But going back to what you brought up first about Notre Dame, I think this is pretty funny. My mom, who's 56 years old, huge Notre Dame football fan, my mom and dad, in upstate New York. Why? Because we grew up with Notre Dame on NBC. My mom was texting me last night. She was PO'd at how bad Notre Dame was playing. She was calling them names on the text messages. She was like, I don't get, they're not the fourth-ranked team in the country this week. They're playing like garbage. She used a couple of expletives. So my mother was PO'd at the Golden Domers last night. And by the way, I think it's so cool that they played in Fenway Park. I absolutely love it. When they play the bowl game at Yankee Stadium, I think that's cool. I think it's great when they play at Fenway. It really reminds me of the NHL when they play those Winter Classic games in football and baseball stadiums. I think it's awesome. And I think I'm a big fan of it. I love when it comes around. So I thought that was pretty cool to see yesterday.
Greater White Show, Mary Tillich there, Joseph Oz here, Brian Benway joining us on the hotline, and Mama Benway giving us her analysis of Notre Dame BC via the text. Always love that. All right, let's
get she was mad, I'm telling you. She hadn't been that mad since I snuck out of the house when I was 12 years old and walked down the street after dinner. So she was really mad.
Let's get to some MLB, and I'm pretty, you know, I'm hopeful this is almost over here. We've got the MLB awards. I'm still really miffed Terry Collins didn't get Manager of the Year. I've had this conversation more than once. Joe Maddon gets it for the Cubs. Harper wins NL MVP. We know how many awards the Houston Astros won, so I'm not even going to get into that. But you know, the MLB kind of really has it right with its offseason and the way they staggered the awards and pitchers and catchers being so close together. I mean, the MLB is doing its best to be a 365 league. What do you think? MLB's got it right, where they're really keeping, you know, kind of the focus, and they do this right with the post, with their regular season awards being awarded after the World Series. They're staying in the conversation.
See, that annoys me, actually, and it's annoyed me for a long time, because the votes take place way back in September, right before the regular season's over with, and here it is Thanksgiving, and we're still seeing who wins these awards. And I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to be more like the NFL, where they're a year-round sport, just like you're talking about. I get it, and if I worked for Major League Baseball, I would be on board. But you know what I like? I like what the NHL does. I like the NHL has the big awards ceremony in Las Vegas about a week or so after the season. They make it like the Grammys. They make it like the Tony Awards. It's a great night where it showcases your sport. I like what the NHL does. And it just annoys me for Major League Baseball. And I get what they're trying to do. I completely understand it. But it just annoys me because I'm in another mode. And I love baseball. I've loved baseball my whole life. It's one of my favorite sports. But get on with it. Don't lead me on. It's like when you're trying to date a girl and she leads you on and she's like, oh, maybe on the next date we'll get to do this. And, you know, maybe on the next date we're going to do that. It's leading us all on, okay? Just get to the end of it. Let us go in and take the girl home and let her stay overnight. Just let's have that happen. I don't want it to be dragged out. I really like the way the NHL does it with the one-night show.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of how that works.
Okay, I agree.
Now, I'm an NHL fan, so I love as well the different ways that the NHL has kind of promoted their sport. I think, honestly, when you talk about publicity, I think the NHL has certainly been one of the poster leagues as far as the ways that you can maximize the most out of the sport. I think also another aspect I think you both probably love just as much as I do is the All-Star game. I think the NHL does one of the best All-Star games, All-Star weekends, right up there with the NBA. I think the NFL is overall, obviously the Pro Bowl for years has been regarded as a joke to me. But when you talk about the All-Star game, All-Star weekend with the NHL, one of the better All-Star weekends, more interactive All-Star weekends. So definitely the NHL has done a really good job of kind of obviously a sport that's hard to get into, really making it easier for new fans, for new people, and for old fans as well to stick around.
One of the big things about that for the NHL is they're finally getting some legitimate airplay on television again. Remember when they were on ESPN every week? They had the big ESPN game of the week, and the Stanley Cup final was on ESPN. And then all of a sudden the TV deal changed, and they were on Versus. Who had Versus, by the way? And it was hard to find Versus on your cable or your satellite provider. A lot of people didn't have Versus. Now they're going back to a lot of games on NBC. I love the Sunday and the Saturday afternoon games. And then you've got the rivalry week game on Wednesdays or Tuesdays or whatever night it is on NBC Sports Network. That's fantastic. And you're right. I think the NHL is doing the best they can. And let's face it, it's going to be the fourth most popular sport out of the four major sports across the country. I get that. But, you know, I worked in hockey for 6 years. I'm from 10 minutes away from where the Miracle on Ice took place. I broadcasted college hockey. I'm from upstate New York. I'm going to be home for Christmas in a month in 3-degree weather with friends of mine playing pond hockey outside. So I grew up with hockey around me, and I'm a huge Montreal Canadiens fan. I'm 30 minutes from Montreal, one of the greatest franchises in sports. So I'm going to be on board. Amiri's going to be on board with hockey, and I really like where they're headed. I think Amiri has it right as far as what they're trying to do. If we could only get NBC to do maybe one game a month during the week, during prime time on regular NBC, like what's the night of the week that they don't have a lot of good TV shows on NBC? It's probably Friday
Monday,
night, right?
Tuesday,
they put the
Wednesday,
worst shows
Thursday,
on Friday nights, I think.
Friday,
well,
Saturday,
I don't watch
Sunday.
A lot of network
okay.
TV, but I don't watch a lot of network TV. But Friday nights is where they usually put the worst shows on the networks because nobody watches TV on Friday nights at home usually. Why not NBC give us one game a month on the national NBC network, maybe on a Friday night in prime time? That would give the NHL some more spotlight, I would think. What do you guys think about that?
That would be a great idea. I love it. What do you think, Amiri?
Yeah, that would be very positive, I think, for the National Hockey League. And we've seen the success Sunday Night Football has had with NBC as far as the network is concerned. You know, I think any steps right now, I think, as you just mentioned, being a hockey fan, growing up with hockey, we kind of see the sport development. Any steps that would make the game a little bit more national, just a little bit more accessible for everybody to kind of get interested in it, because it's a great sport. It's a fantastic sport. So I certainly think anything that can be done to promote it and globalize it would be definitely beneficial for the league.
Hey, I'm just thinking it's, you know, absolutely wow that a guy who lives and works in Texas is talking about any other sport but high school football on a Friday night. How dare he? I'm surprised he's going to be able to make it work. I mean,
well, actually, my high school, my high school football broadcast season ended yesterday. All the teams that we cover are now bounced out of the playoffs in the second round. It was funny, earlier in the week, my broadcast partner and ESPN San Antonio, who I work for as well, they were like, we might have two games Thanksgiving week. And I was like, cool, awesome. And then all the teams we cover lost. So I don't have any more football games. So,
oh, man. And I know we're talking about it up here in Jersey, the three-time state champions. Montclair lost, so it's a big deal. One of the local teams up here, which used to be a rival of my school, Dickinson St. Peter's won. You got the Don Boscos out here. There's a lot of nationally covered high school teams out here in New Jersey. So, yeah, I'm big into the high school scene and can't believe it, man. I thought you'd be covering them for at least a couple more weeks the way it was working down there.
Yeah, but the crazy part is in the state of Texas, and I'm not sure how familiar you guys are with how it works down here, there are six rounds of the state playoffs. So next week is round three. If you make it to the state championship game in high school football, it's December 18th and 19th, the week before Christmas. Isn't that insane how far and how long it takes to play these playoffs down here? It's insane. When do they end up your way? I know New York State, where I'm from, the state championship is this weekend, Thanksgiving week, at the Carrier Dome right. in Syracuse. Well, what
exactly.
is it like in New Jersey?
In New Jersey, they're a couple of weeks from now. I believe they're playing at MetLife, if I'm not mistaken. And I heard Mike Quick, great reporter who does a lot of high school football up here, said there's at least a couple more weeks of football up here as well. And if you're in the college, and if you're in the high school playoff, if you've got a Thanksgiving rivalry game, you go play your rivalry game, and then you jump back into the playoffs. So it's pretty interesting how it works out here. But, yeah, they are getting pretty late into the season. I remember when I was playing, and by December, the season was over.
Yeah, it's crazy. December 18th and 19th, the week before Christmas, is the state championship for Texas high school football. It's insane that it goes that late. They go from August to December. So,
but it's
awesome down here. There were 15,000 people at the game I broadcasted yesterday. So it's huge down here, as you can imagine.
It's
a high school game, folks. Hey, we always have at least – we always have a standing ovation crowd of two here, Brian, every time you join us on the program. The great Brian Benway always joining us here every Sunday, giving us his take not just on Texas sports but on all things sports. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not with an I, folks. Hey, we know you're going to have a very, very enjoyable holiday, so wishing you the best as well, my man. We'll be talking, and when you get up here, make sure you holler at me. I'll see if I take the trip up north or if I try to lure you down to the city or something. We'll see how it happens, but can't wait to. Okay?
All right, guys. Have a good Sunday. Two claps and a Ric Flair. Woo!
I can't believe you went there. I'm done. There's Ric Flair. I mean, Brian Benway joining us on the program. Always love having him on. His enthusiasm, his insights, always a funny one. Green and White Show, Mary Tillich there, Joseph Foss here. Let's round third and head home on this week's program. New York, New Jersey Red Bulls, my man, they're in the Final Four. I'm not talking college football. I am talking football, but the other football, I mean soccer. Mary, you know what I'm talking about. It's the MLS Cup.
Yes, sir.
And the Red Bulls, the local Red Bulls, they'll be in it. So let's see if they can make it past and continue to flourish. We went over the MLB. Hey, you know what? I thought it was the curse of Spurrier. I couldn't wait to write that one. Most taking out Florida. Amiri, it's been another outstanding week here on the Green and White Show. Can you believe it? We got some Jets football in. We got some great games in. We've always got great guests. Wow. We're going to have to pack up and do it again next week?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Why not? So as usual, for Amiri Tillich there, Joseph Haas here, God bless. Go Jets. Turn us up and take us home.
The Bomb Factory. Hey!
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east. Thrives in living color, in shape fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women and more women. More sinning, I'm a disease of success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, new, most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black.